Please help me welcome J. Lauren Norris.
It's not what you know, it's who you know. That's what he said. And I remember when he said it, it kind of drove me crazy because he was taking advantage of the system. He wasn't doing the right thing. He wasn't working as hard as everybody else. He wasn't even doing what he was supposed to be doing. He was manipulating a relationship to get his way. I'm guessing you've encountered him, or maybe it was her, in the course of your career. And there's a right way and a wrong way to make your way to the top in leadership. And, well, there's also a way to survive when you have to lead from the middle. That's what we're going to talk about in this episode of Leading Leaders. Stay tuned. I'm J. Lauren Norris with Leading Leaders Podcast, and it dawns on me that I'm not the only one who's been in that position where I was expected to lead, but while there were people that were supposed to answer to me or that I was responsible to, and there were people that I was supposed to be responsible to myself, and there were also people that were my peers. Well, that's what we mean by the 360-degree leader, leading from the middle. That means you're not the top dog, but you're also not at the bottom. And there are a lot of people at your level. In fact, there's another phrase for it in corporate America. It's called mid-level management. Nobody strives for mid-level management. Nobody strives. If you are in mid-level management, let me ask you, did you strive to be there? Did you work really hard to work your way all the way to mid-level management? No, you just know that it's a season you've got to get through if you want to make it to the top. If you want to own your own company, if you want to be an entrepreneur, if you want to be in the C-level suite or the executive director suite, you're not going to get there without some time in the trenches as a mid-level manager. It's just life. Now, the real challenge is there are a lot of people that make it to mid-level manager and they, for lack of a better term, they get stuck there. They don't want to go any further, or they can't go any further. There's a thing in corporate America called the Peter Principle. And the idea of the Peter Principle is that somebody has achieved to the level of their highest incompetence. They've done everything that they can do up to this point, and we've reached a point in their growth, their development, their skill set, their competencies, that to take them to the next level is a fail because they can't do it. They don't have the personality. They don't have the education. They don't have the understanding. They don't have the get along to go along kind of a thing. They're just not there. And while we hate to admit that that's true, unfortunately, there are a lot of people in that mid-level management realm of corporate America, political institutions, educational institutions, they get to the highest level of their incompetence and they get stuck. Unfortunately, in a lot of bureaucratically run organizations, they rule the world. There's a great book called Woke Inc. I don't have it immediately handy. Woke Inc. is a great book by presidential candidate Vivek Ramaswamy. He's since dropped out of the race. But in his book, he talks about a very powerful group of people in the world. Not in a company, not in a state or a region, not in a country, but in the world. They are these mid-level managers, also known as the administrative class. Now, let me put that in another phrase, because you may not have experienced them as the administrative class or the mid-level managers who rule the world. In the military, they're called the E4 Mafia. They're not the highest rank. They're not the lowest rank. They're just the ones that get everything done. And if you cross them, for you, they'll get, nothing done. In fact, there's a place that I worked in, big corporate America, a Fortune 50 company. And in this Fortune 50 company, the person who handled all the sales documentation that went to the highest level to sign off on it, to get approved, which if that didn't happen, you didn't get your paycheck. It didn't matter what your numbers are or what your performance is. If it didn't get signed off on by the right person, meaning it didn't go across the right desk on the right date at the right time, if it didn't happen, it didn't happen. I mean, you can have all the proof in the world, but if that paperwork wasn't submitted to the right person on the right day at the right time, it didn't happen. You did it, but you don't get credit for it. Now, it may show up as credit for somebody else. It may vanish into a black hole for 2, 3, 5, 6 months. It might get shifted from, say, day 10 of a reporting period to day 5 of the next reporting period, where if it was on day 10, you've got this massive commission check, and on day 5 of the next, it's nothing, because it just kind of falls into the wash of all the other loss that kind of got shuffled around, and the highest gains and the lowest losses all get averaged out like a bell curve. Yeah, happened to me. Cost me about $30,000. True story. Fortune 50 company. A decision was made by a couple of people that, and the comment that was made by the regional VP when I said, "Why did you do that to me?" The answer was, "Well, you're so good at what you do. If you just live through this, you just understand that there's a bigger picture than just your paycheck. There are a whole lot more people who are counting on your sales progress. You'll make so much more money than that in the long run. It won't even matter. You'll never miss it." It wasn't about justice. It wasn't about right. It was about the administrative class, the mid-level management, the people who have to answer to somebody else, but also have a bunch of people who answer to them, doing what they're told and making sure that everyone else complies as well. Now, when you're in that place, how then do you lead? How then should you lead? What are the things that should be your priorities, your absolutes that you have to execute with? Now, I can tell you, this is a concept that is so deep and so broad, and there are millions of books in the management class that are written about this concept. Peter Drucker is probably one of the most well-known management cohorts in the world. But there's a whole lot now that goes into that world of psychology. In fact, I've got a great book over here. This one. This is... Strengths-based leadership. Now, strengths-based leadership is from the Gallup Group, and it is a great book about leadership that really points out the idea that there are going to be people on your team that are smarter than you, they have different skill sets than you, they have different capabilities and competencies than you, and that doesn't mean that you have to compete against them. It means as a good leader, you find the place for them. And sometimes when they're your peer, you build relationships of equality and connection with them so that they can take advantage of your strength and you can take advantage of their strengths, and together you both can rise up, as opposed to competing and trying to cut the head off the snake, so to speak. You work together to accomplish what neither one of you could do on your own. That's just kind of genius. But if you don't understand strengths-based leadership, it's going to be really hard to do that. So you're going to have to be willing to study. Now, here's one of the hardest things that I run into when it comes to coaching people who are at the beginning of their leadership career, or right in the middle as a mid-level manager, or maybe they're just right on the cusp. They have people that come to them for advice. They have people that come to them for questions and answers because they're really skilled at their job, but they don't yet hold the title of manager. They don't yet get paid as a leader. And so the result is they kind of feel like, why should I answer your questions? Why should I help you succeed when the company doesn't even recognize my accomplishments? Why should I push you up the ladder if I'm not getting anywhere? You know, there's an interesting facet being a firefighter in the Air Force, that we have no officer corps in the fire department. The first officer, commissioned officer, to whom the fire department reports is the squadron commander of civil engineering. So if there's a civil engineering squadron on the base, that commander oversees the fire department. And that commander is usually a very high ranking. By the time you get to squadron commander, you're pretty high ranking. You're probably a major, minimum a captain, but probably a major, maybe a lieutenant colonel. And so the fire chief is when a military person, a senior master sergeant, a chief master sergeant, maybe a tech sergeant, So they're E8s, E9s, working their way up. But they're the highest level enlisted in the entire military corps, reporting to an officer who's got some pretty serious experience. That's a structure that doesn't have a whole lot of conflict. But there were many times as firefighters that we would have officers who would be coming into the fire department as brand new in the military. They got 2 or 3 years in the military service, or some of them 2 or 3 months. They're cadets. They're graduates. They're straight out of college. They came into the military with a four-year degree, and so they're 26, 27 years old, tops, and they're new to the military. They're new to the fire department. They don't know anything about the fire department. It's not their job because we don't have officers in the fire department. But because they have the bars, because they're a commissioned officer, they would look at the NCOs and go, you need to do it like this. You need to do it like this. Because I know, because I have the bars, you have to do what I say. And the firefighters that were 10, 20 years in the service, that were ready for retirement, but had only reached the level of an E6 or an E7, they would often look at those butter bars and go, son, I got kids older than you. I got grandkids almost as old as you. And you're going to come in here and tell me how to do a job I've been doing since you were in diapers? That's going to be a problem. But see, we think that only happens in the military. It doesn't. There are a lot of people that come out of their college careers convinced they know everything there is to know about everything there is to know anything about. And then they jump into the alphabet soup of all of the different divisions and departments within an organization that's designed to level the playing field. And now they're in charge of the playing field, and they start leveling the playing field according to their worldview, according to their ideas. And the people who've been in the company for a while, in the organization, in the institution for a while, they look at it and they go, that's not going to work. I mean, we've tried it before. I can tell you why it's not going to work, but that doesn't really fly with somebody who has the title. And so now you've got this conflict within the organization. You have people who say, we tried that. Here's what we found was a better solution. Oh, no, we're going to try it again. Well, it didn't work last time. We did find some modifications that brought good balance, but this is like trying to rollerblade on a tilt-a-whirl. The level playing field is sometimes a myth. It just doesn't exist. There are modifications that can be made. There are things that can be done to make life bearable, to give opportunity. But most of those aren't done administratively. They're done in the hearts and the minds of the people on your team. You can't just change the institutional organization and force systemic change. You've got to change the hearts and the minds of the people on the team. You've got to build stronger relationships within the team. And if you're a mid-level manager and you're trying to administratively orchestrate a level playing field, good luck with your tilt-a-whirl. It's going to swing like a pendulum from one side to the other on a regular basis, because it's human nature. But human nature is the thing that if you work to train it, use some strength-based training. And this other great book that I've studied many times, there's still some depth in here that I haven't even got close to yet. This is the 360 Degree Leader by John Maxwell. On page 182, he makes a really profound point. He said, there are two ways to get ahead. In fact, he says, there seem to be two main paths for people to get ahead in organizations. One way is to try to get ahead by doing the work. The other is to try to get ahead by working an angle. The difference between production and politics. People who rely on production, you ready for this? Depend on how they grow. People who rely on politics depend on who they know. Sound like somebody that you've experienced? It's somebody I've experienced. People who rely on production focus on what they do. People who rely on politics focus on what they say. People who rely on production become better than they appear. People who rely on politics appear better than they are. People who rely on production provide substance. Politics, they take shortcuts. People who rely on production do what's necessary. People who rely on politics, they do what's popular. People who rely on production work to control their own destiny. People who rely on politics let others control their destiny. Let me add to that. Or they blame everybody else for their failure to reach their destiny. People who rely on production grow into the next level. People who rely on politics hope to be given the next level. People who rely on production base decisions on principles. People who rely on politics base decisions on opinions. The bottom line is that people who might be described as political are ruled by their desire to get ahead instead of the desire for excellence, productivity, teamwork, and consistency. Whatever values and skills they have are secondary to their ambition. And while they sometimes appear to get ahead, their gains are always temporary in the long term. Integrity, consistency, productivity always pay off in better teamwork and a clear conscience. Now, if you realize that you're surrounded by people who are working so hard to be in control, where their emotions and their opinions and their political ideologies make the primary decision first, a lot of times you'll find those alphabet organizations within your organization. They're driven through HR, which is driven through outside standards, which is driven by political current, which is driven by cultural mores. And once they've embedded themselves into your organization, they set standards and parameters and expectations of behavior and thinking and ideas. Not necessarily relevant to the production, the productivity, the profitability, the success of the team. No, they're about finding that one individual who's been left out, ostracized, ridiculed, not made to feel so important, whose feelings and opinions are contrary sometimes to the entire organization or the culture as a whole. And because of that, they're protected. They're set apart, they're lauded, they're lifted up, they're promoted. They're given jobs they're not qualified for. Now we've seen the Peter Principle stretched beyond its breaking point when we see people who are promoted because of their ideologies and not because of their competencies. Now, when you're learning to lead from the middle, you've got to work with all of those realities. You've got to deal with the fact that there will be people in your organization who you know for a fact are not competent to be promoted to the next level, but they're going to be because they know the right people. They play the right political game. They schmooze in the right places. They network with the right decision makers, the administrative class. When you lead from the middle, you'll realize that sometimes your hardest effort isn't going to get you there. That is defeating. That's crushing. That's painful. When you know that you've done everything you can, and somebody else who schmoozes better gets the promotion. Now, you've got some options. You've got some things you can do. In John's book here, he points out some really good strategies. He talks, for an example, about placing people in their strength zones. That's a great section to read through. There's another one that says, I should have marked this other page, but forgive me one second. Stand up for what's right, not just what's popular. Look at all sides of the issue. Stay away from the petty arguments. These are really good, and each one of these is its own paragraph. It's another teaching point. Say what you mean and mean what you say. This is about integrity. See, that first segment that we looked at, where he says, they become better than they appear. They provide substance. They do what's necessary. They work to control their own destiny. They grow to the next level. They make decisions based on principle. Not opinion, not emotion, not how I feel, not how does somebody else feel about what I think, but about principle. If the bottom line is the bottom line, and that's our goal, is to make sure that the company stays profitable so that we stay employed, then the decisions we make should be values-based, principles-based, and consistent. If you have integrity, that's what you do. If you don't have integrity, you follow every wind of change that comes today, tomorrow, every new idea that comes down the pike that has no proof of success. Maybe even historical proof of failure, but we want to try it again. It failed the last 47 times we've tried it in the last 10 decades, but hey, let's give it another shot. Maybe all those other failures were missing something and we'll make it work this time. If you want to be solid where you're at as a leader, make your decisions based on core values, based on principles, based on who you are, being productive for the organization. And I'm going to be honest, there are going to be some people that they just don't want to be led. You can't do anything to help them succeed because they just won't have it. They want to be a victim. They want to be in this political class of they are hope to be given the next level. They don't want to earn it. They don't want to work for it. They want to be labeled as a victim. They'll slap whatever label on their chest is necessary to be promoted to the next level without the effort. As long as it doesn't require the effort and it wins based on opinion, they're good with that. When you find yourself in an organization like that, it may be time to look for another organization. Now, that doesn't mean your influence has expired. It doesn't mean your opportunity to lead is over. Sometimes the hardest thing in the world to do is to be loyal to those who are above you when you know they're making bad decisions. But you stay and you do what you know needs to be done, hoping for that day when things will change. I can tell you, though, there are a lot of people who absolutely hate their job. And that right there is the reason. They stay hoping that they can make change happen in an organization that's resistant to change. They stay hoping that if they just do the right thing long enough, the right thing will eventually prevail. In the grand scheme of things, I believe that to be absolutely true. In the microcosm of our daily work, it doesn't always pan out that way because we don't have complete control of that. As a leader in the middle, I'm going to tell you to stand your ground. Be who you are. Determine your own core values and hold strong to them. Decide what the principles are that guide your life, that guide your organization, that best benefit the group that you've agreed to serve. Give it everything you have in that space. Understand that your ideas, even though they're your ideas, they're not always the best ideas. You've got to be humble enough to say, hey, I have this new idea. It might be stupid, but I'd love your feedback. I'd love your input. I'd love you to walk this dog with me and tell me what you think of it. Is it a good idea or is it a bad idea? And then also be willing to say, okay, I came up with the idea, but the 14th revision of it is so much better than my original idea. That's called teamwork. That's collaboration at its best. It takes humility to do that. It takes the willingness to say, even if it was my idea, even if my idea made it all the way to the top and it's successful, I'm okay if I don't get credit for it because I make my decisions based on principles, on what's best for the organization, not what's best for my career, what's best for the overall productivity, not what's best for my next promotion. And if I've got an idea that will save the company money, that will generate opportunity, that will make the lives of the people I work with and that our company serves better, take my idea and run with it. I don't even care who gets credit. I just want it to work. If you're not willing to operate that way, you're going to have a hard time moving to the next level. Because the next level is going to require a lot of that. There are a lot of C-level executives, directors and above, in corporate America all over the world, who have genius ideas that on their own cannot implement them. No, they've got to go back to the administrative class or the E4 mafia. They've got to take that idea and hand it down the chain for somebody to actually execute it. And at some point, your idea is going to get beat up, modified, adulterated, changed, into something you may not recognize, but now it works, and it works well, and people are executing it, and it's serving them well, and it's serving others well, and that's a great idea. That's what makes it a great idea. because it may have been your child, so to speak, but now it's been raised up by the community and everybody's had a little bit of input. If as a leader from the middle, you don't have an attitude that says, I can come up with a great idea and share it with 100 people, then chances are you're probably not going to go very far from where you are. If you find yourself in that place as a leader, where every opportunity that you have seems to be squelched because somebody else is playing the game, if you've given your best effort, if you've shared your ideas, you've collaborated with others, you've given the spotlight away to those who are doing laudable work, and you're still going unrecognized, I would consider whether there's another opportunity for you to be a leader in your own organization, or another opportunity where you'll be genuinely appreciated for the work that you put in. Sometimes that's timing. Sometimes that's a different department of the same organization. Sometimes it's an opportunity for you to start your own thing. But take those things to heart. Invest in the people around you. Find their skill sets. Maximize them. Collaborate with them. Share your ideas. Give them away. Be willing to see the idea succeed because it's the right thing, whether you get the credit or not. If you're willing to do those things, you can lead from the middle. If you do those things and there's still no payoff, maybe it's time to take those ideas and do something on your own. I'm J. Lauren Norris with Leading Leaders Podcast for Tell It Like It Is TV. Have a blessed day.
Lauren is a master teacher on storytelling, and I learned so much. I'm really going to have to sit down and go back through everything, and I think I might have to have some more coffees with Lauren, but it was totally worth my time, and I really highly recommend it if you're looking to grow your ministry, grow your business, grow your career. Lauren will serve you well.
Thank you. Subscribe now for our extensive video library of leadership lessons promoting faith, family, and freedom.